It's to the best of our knowledge. I'm Anne Strangechamps. A lot of us have been spending less time with other people than we might have liked, and more time with another species. Dogs.
There's kind of a musher camp up ahead. Let's see what's going on.
Producer Mark Rickards went to meet two people who know dogs better than most. Quince Mountain and Blair Braverman.
Hi!
Hi!
Are you with Public Radio?
Yeah, well, there you go!
Blair and two are right here.
Oh, cool, great.
Yeah.
They're champion mushers, which means dogs are their life.
All right, you're here to take a sled dog ride with us on a cart?
Sure. Yeah.
I felt so grateful during the pandemic that I had somewhere safe I could go with my friends who are dogs.
It's a four-wheeler just going by doing stuff.
Dogs view the world differently, and they live in the moment. They're thinking about where they are right now and what they have and who they're with. And that's something that it can be hard to remember when you're alone as a human, to just be present. But the dogs force you to, and that alone makes a big difference.
So this is Willow. She's running with her mama. And they're going to do the two-dog bike class. Is that right, Willow? She's standing on my lap right now and wanting her butt scratched.
Am I allowed to pet her?
Yes, okay. You absolutely can.
I mean, the mother here is a superstar, and she's the faster one right now. Her daughter just seemed a little off yesterday. We'll see if she does better today. I mean, she didn't do terrible. It was fine, but you can only go as fast as your slowest dog, you know?
Right.
You gotta all come in together as a team, so.
I think teammates feels like a really good word. It's not like we're the bosses and they're our, you know, our team. It's like we're all on a team together, and it's us and them moving through the world and having these adventures, relying on each other the whole way.
I think also, though, people project a lot onto dogs. People will be like, if a dog were president, and I'm sort of like, which dog? Because some dogs are just constantly plotting to steal each other's bones. And some have great leadership abilities, and some would be maybe better as like a sanitation worker or something.
If every dog had a podcast, what would it be?
Now I want to know what the podcasts are. Dog podcast.
If Flame had a podcast, it would be reviewing dead things. If Wixen had a podcast, I think it would be an interview show where he just gets really enthusiastically into people's faces and is like, what do you think about this? Zagat wouldn't have a podcast.
Just a newsletter.
He's too visual. And it would be like an old school blog, like early 2000s, what I did today, with great enthusiasm and a lot of exclamation points.
I ate this today.
Yes. Colbert would do like, be a restaurant critic, but every single thing would get 10 out of 5 stars. We could do this all day long.
I love it.
I mean, we've had a lot of dogs. Every single one of them is completely different from every other dog.
Blair Braverman and Quince Mountain are celebrities in the world of sled dog racing. And more importantly, their dogs are celebrities too. Which says something about the depth of the human-dog bond. Dogs are humans' oldest companions. We've been together for more than 10,000 years, but we're still learning about them. And so partly, as a way of saying thanks to all those pandemic puppies, today we're sharing stories of people whose lives have been transformed by dogs. Mark Rickards and Shannon Henry Kleiber teamed up to bring us this story.
Three, two, one, go!
All right.
it's hard to hold these dogs back when they're ready to go.
Mark, you went to a race in northern Wisconsin and hung out with Blair Braverman and Quince Mountain and their dogs. What was the feel of the day?
So this event is called the Doty's Dusty Dog Dryland Race.
It's Peppy barking to go.
We're watching these sprint races. Shorter races that anywhere from a whole team of dogs to just two dogs or then a single dog and somebody running behind them.
This is their first big event in harness of the year.
Like they have to stay focused.
Yeah.
Yeah.
It's kind of a preparation for the Iditarod, or is that the right way to describe it?
It's almost more like social practice, just getting used to the environment of being in a race.
They're adjusting back into like business mode, and they come to a place with a lot of sled dogs and they're like, we know what this means. Mm. This means we get to run all out. And that's their favorite thing.
Nice.
Now we get out of the way.
Yeah.
Once someone has seen sled dogs in action, there's no question. You can just see the excitement that they have and the drive they have to run. They are more competitive than we are. If our dogs see another dog team, they will want to pass the other dog team, and they will be upset if the other dog team passes them. And we're like, it's okay, we're in fresh snow, like, let the other team break trail for a while. And they'll be like, no, 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 no. We break trail, we are in front.
You each raced a team in the Iditarod, and I wanted to ask you to tell me a story from that experience. So something that happened or something you felt during that time.
I have one that comes to mind. Iditarod is the most famous dog sled race, you know, one of the oldest. And there are these sort of legendary places along the trail. Like there's something called the Dalzell Gorge, which is basically you come down from a mountain following this creek. It's just terrifying. And you're just like zigzagging across this incredibly steep series of waterfalls, practically over ice bridges. Like it's ridiculous.
What's that game where the ball bounces around between things?
Pinball. It feels like that. It was so much worse than I had imagined. It was so much worse. But Peppy, our leader, just took on this trail and very deftly, with such confidence, was taking all these turns and leading the other dogs exactly where they needed to go. And all I could think again and again as I held on and hoped I wouldn't go flying off into space was, Peppy is leading us through the gorge. Peppy is leading us through the gorge. I am in her paws, so to speak. We were all in her, under her responsibility, so that was sort of what blew my mind the most.
I love that description, the two of you together, and you can't talk in English, but you can be not worried or try to say, it's okay, let's go, and communicate that way. I mean, is it body language? What kind of language are you using?
Well, usually the dogs are looking forward when they're running.
Yeah.
So they can't see your body language, but they can feel your mood and your energy and you're talking to them.
They can hear how your voice sounds.
They can hear how your voice sounds. And often you'll find people who have been mushers for a long time will stay very calm, even in stressful situations. They radiate calm because the dogs are going to copy your energy. Like there's a big moose or a wolf on the trail and you learn to just be like, okay guys, all right, because then they'll say, well, they want to eat the animal, so that they have their own motivation to get excited.
It's quite a contrast to have, and sometimes there's an animal that humans might be worried about, like a wolf. And, you know, our dogs just move forward, sort of not giving it a thought. And Blair and I will be like each on a sled, like, did we just mush past a huge black wolf 10 yards away out next to it for a while? Oh, I guess so.
It just did that wolf run beside us and none of the dogs cared? Where then if you see a deer, they're like, let us eat it, let us eat it, let us eat it.
If it's a small animal, like a mouse or something, they usually just consider it a trail snack and move on.
And then there's moments where, like, the dogs might be nervous, but you're not at all. Like, if you have to go through a tunnel or an underpass or something, they will be like, what is this? Why is there a tunnel? And you'll be like, okay, let me walk with you, and it'll be okay. And they're like, all right, we trust you, but we do not like this tunnel. So the moments when you lean on each other are different. They lean on you sometimes, and you lean on them at other times. Oh, here we go.
50 seconds. 1, 10, 9, 8, 7, 6, 5, 4, 3, 2, 1.
Well, I've been following Blair and Quince for a while and know they have this tremendous community, both in person and online.
Yeah, I mean, there were spectator dogs that were there. You know, it is very much a community.
It is just one of these things where it's kind of a viral thing on Twitter. I mean, people just love the dogs and get attached to them and follow their stories and, you know, want to hear Leap ate that kind of meat last night and didn't like it, or, you know, they just kind of love these Blair and Quince's dog stories.
They're pretty famous. They have a little bit of a magnetism to them. They have people who they brought in to help them with various things or to help train the dogs directly, or like even for these smaller events, they're basically loaning their dogs out for others to train with them, which was kind of mind-blowing at first. These are like champion dogs that have run these incredible athletic events, and it's like, no, you should go out, you should try it. They engage with people all the time, just people who are interested in what they're doing.
The humans who follow the dogs are so kind and incredible. Like when I was in the Iditarod, I started coming into villages and people would hug me. And I didn't know what was going on. I thought, I'm really sleep deprived because I have no idea what's happening. And it was because fans of the team had organized to raise money for schools in all the villages we passed through and raised over $100,000 that year. And this has continued every single year since then.
The experience of watching a 12 or 14 day race online can be kind of slow.
There's
they're
just a
checking and they're like, oh, Blair's still resting. Is everything okay? What if she died? And so people have all these anxieties and they just kind of started sublimating them into initiatives like the Iditarod, where as people watch and through the month of March during racing, they're sort of knitting hats and gloves and things that ultimately get sent to people, villages along the trail where we mush.
Oh, here they come. Hugh and Tuffy and Willow are running right back after finishing their event. I see some smiles. They're drinking some water.
Yeah, they're going right for the water buckets.
Yep. Good job, you guys. Hugh, I wasn't able to finish one.
She's just... This dog is really special. I mean, a dog that can finish the Iditarod and then come and be competitive in a 1 or 2 or 3 mile sprint race is a pretty amazing dog,
wow.
Pretty versatile.
Mm-hmm.
Did you get to meet Pepe?
I did get to meet Pepe. Pepe actually towed me on a bike, which was kind of wild. So this event is called bike jorning, and it's two dogs towing somebody on a bike. It's pretty much exactly what it sounds like.
That sounds so fun.
I am not dressed for this.
You have so much joy and so much happiness with these dogs. Has there been a hardest moment or the hardest time and something that you had to get through with them?
I mean, the hardest moment of having sled dogs is the hardest moment of having dogs in general and loving dogs, which is that their lives are shorter than ours. So sometimes we have to say goodbye. That's the grief of loving animals whose lives are shorter than ours. Something that is beautiful about having a dog team is that you can see the other dogs on the team mirroring the behavior and the movements and the instincts of dogs who have not been there in a while. When we first got into mushing, we had the dog named Trace, who developed lymphoma. I think we'd only had him 4 months, but we loved him so much, and he passed away shortly after that. There was this one driveway that Trace loved. He was fascinated by it, and he would always look over his shoulder and be staring at it when we went by. And none of the other dogs cared. But after he passed, you know, I'd notice other dogs would look at that driveway. And it's just this one, like, inconspicuous spot, but it feels like they sort of learned there was a dog who thought this was important, so we keep an eye on it.
That's a beautiful way of remembering the dog.
It is, and you see that, and it does feel like, I don't know, I mean, this is getting a lot bigger, but it makes me think that that's how human lives work too, and we just sort of don't have long enough lifespans to see it. You know, we shape our community, and then as it continues to evolve, the impacts of the people who are there are still making ripples.
Blair Braverman is a dog sledder, adventurer, and the author of Dogs on the Trail, A Year in the Life. She also has a regular column in Outside Magazine. Quince Mountain is a dog musher, writer, and survivalist. He was the first openly transgender musher in the Iditarod. They both live with their sled dogs in the Northwoods of Wisconsin. And that was Shannon Henry Kleiber and Mark Rickers bringing us their story.